difficult, frustrating, but it's a wretched problem in Fiji. This is the context of my talk. Why is there a cosmological question? I want to address that issue.
The Cronus principle and deep gravity in the night community basically continuously breaking into H-specifically active energy density, positive and negative energy symmetry in the transient zero point vacuum energy density. And that gets to the formation of the stability of the vacuum, the cosmology problem, and conclusion. So I separate the so-called cosmological concept problem from the cosmology problem for reasons which were explained and which were indicated by Cliff Burgess's talk this morning. So why is there a cosmological concept problem? Is empty space really empty? You have to think about this. Because in cosmology, the issue is whether you have these quantum fluctuations which produce some vacuum density, whether they exist in empty space. In quantum field theory, the notion of empty space is replacing that of a vacuum state. To find that to be the ground, most energy state approach quantum particle field. So a truly quantum mechanical feature of the quantum field is that they exhibit the zero point fluctuations everywhere in space, even in regions which are otherwise empty, that is devoid of matter and radiation. So the story begins with Einstein's fluid equations, as with many things in modern physics. And we put in the cosmological constant in 1917 in order to get the static universe, which we believed in at the time. Before Friedman published his famous paper showing Einstein's gravity is actually dynamical, as far as the cosmology is concerned. The confrontation of Einstein's equation and observations shows that round is very small. The tightest bound comes from cosmology and problem numbers. And in centimeters squared, one round is very small. Theoretical estimates of various contributions to the vacuum energy density Q of T exceed the observational bound by at least 40 orders of magnitude. This large discrepancy constitutes the cosmological constant problem. And if you want to entertain, well, so this problem has, over the years, created a crisis in physics, possibly. That can be compared with the crisis of the ultraviolet divergences of Brady Jean's law, which led to Planck's discovery of the Planck distribution in quantum mechanics. And it has led to eminent senior theorists, maybe not so eminent, not so senior theorists, suggesting that we have a multiverse and that we have an anthropic principle. And there's even one eminent theorist who has claimed in this institute, I was at the top, that we should give up doing physics the way we have since Newton, and not expect to falsify theories in a conventional way. I strongly object to this, and I did at his talk. He wasn't too happy about my objections. And the reason is, of course, that in such a situation, it's very hard to continue physics the way we have, producing and falsifying the theory, making it showing that it's verified by experimental physics. That's what physics is all about in the end, confronting ideas and theories with experimental facts. We shouldn't forget this. Okay. Now, Ricard has suggested distinguish at least two different meanings of the notion of the cosmological concept. Calculation of the cosmological constant, exposed to the vacuum density, from assuming real QFT vacuum fluctuations, leads to this huge function in common, as we'll see. But there's a second issue, a need for lambda to explain cosmological observations, starting that with acceleration of expansion of the universe. So the expansion of the universe, the acceleration of expansion of the universe is distressing. It's like Rabi said about the muon, two order type. Why do we need this? Okay, we don't need it. But it's true, supposedly. For observation from supernovae. The cosmological process being in and out of ice space equations from the time of ice age reduced to complexity 17, to try to balance gravitation and thus secure a stable universe. It has a long history, it almost goes back for 50 years. I'm just going to make some brief comments about the history of this subject. If you go back to the papers by Nernst in 1916, who was studying the structure of molecules, he found that there was a medium, empty space has a medium film of radiation called the liquid vapor, which contains a large amount of energy. And he discovered, of course, that the energy is the zero point vacuum energy, and it diverges particularly in the frequency. So in fact, you can have an infinite zero point vacuum energy. He found this. In his paper, somewhat disconcerting. Pauli, already in the 20s, was concerned about the gravitational effects of zero point vacuum energy. And my colleague, Norbert Stahmer, at Zurich in Technical Institute, told me that the legend was that one night he calculated the gravitational effect of the electromagnetic zero point energy. He applied a cutoff in the electron radius and found that the radius of the universe would not even reach the moon. So the next morning he met his students at the cafe in Zurich, which he did always, and told them about this. And they said, "Professor Powell, how would you solve this problem?" And he said, "The vacuum does not gravitate." Stahmer told him, "This is the legend." Good. Well, that's one solution to the problem. As we'll see, things don't work out quite that way. It was a good first start. He never actually published a paper on this. There were allusions to it in his famous encyclopedia article on Einstein's gravity theory, the most important thing. Weinberg writes in 1989, perhaps surprisingly, it was a long time before particle physics began seriously to worry about this problem, despite the demonstration of the Cassegrain effect of the reality of zero point emissions. So we started worrying about this since a lot of it since 1989, and Weinberg's well known. Okay, so Pauli found was that if you calculate this energy from the electrolytic equations, Maxwell's equations, you get this result proportional to h bar, which is a constant. And when you calculate the vacuum density, you get this result, which you have a cutoff, frequency cutoff. This is what Nernst discovered in 1916. So, the zero-point aggregation is infinite, divergent, and you have to force effective. If you assume that this entity of the QED zero-point energy type prime energy, you get this ghastly prediction, which many papers on the subject start almost with this number, saying, well, if you calculate the zero-point vacuum energy from the vacuum field, and you assume the cutoff of prime energy, you get 120 orders of magnitude wrong. Okay. And this is cited as one of the worst, if not the worst, prediction in the history of science. Justified and so on. So, the question then is a matter of conscience. Can you live with this kind of fine tuning? Some people can. I can't. It gets down to a personal issue. I'm simply objecting. Okay. Yes, sir.
I just have a comment. You said that this was analogous to the ultraviolet catastrophe. In your earlier remarks, you said that this was an analog of the ultraviolet catastrophe. But really, it is the ultraviolet catastrophe. What's happened is that quantum mechanics just made it worse.
But very good. Thank you.
In the old one, you had, I mean, they're both coming from having infinite degrees of freedom at short distances. In the old one, it was just kT. Now it's omega cubed, so it's just become worse. It's quartic instead of...
This is good. Okay, so experimentally verified physical effects, such as the passing effect, the line shift, the change of vision from atoms, and all of the very moment we know about the famous story about this, makes QED vacuum energy and vacuum field fluctuations appear real. However, these measurements are only material systems. Only some material system associated with our measurements. And for example, the Cassidy effect, we have the plates. And for line shift, we have hydrogen, so you've got a proton or a nucleus and an electron. So, in cosmology, we don't have metal plates out there. So you're in empty space. So you have to abstract what you measure in the land to an empty space out there and say, well, the same problem occurs out there. You have these vacuum fluctuations and you have this divergence here of what happened. Could it be that QFT vacuum and non-zero energy in empty space in the absence of any material constituents could be justified beyond experimenting? So this is something that has to be settled in your mind and discussed. Senses is yes, you do. Could the observations allow the indication that there are no empty space vacuum fluctuations? I believe the answer is no. Because when you do calculations of the line shift in QED, you need to assert the reality of quantum vacuum fluctuations. Schrödinger published a book called Sources. The Julian Schrödinger, in which he claimed he could do QED without vacuum fluctuations. And he didn't use quantum operators in the usual sense. Other people have attempted this, even trying to use semi-classical physics to the line shift. And it doesn't work. You cannot get the higher order corrections correct. So we have to deal with these vacuum fluctuations when you do what the field theory in order to get agreement with this group. This is very important to have too. Now, Gwilym's principle of deep gravity and directing energy. So let's consider QED, the electron zero-point energy, and we have this picture here. These are the disconnected bubbles that add up to the vacuum density times the root minus g in Einstein's equation. And as long as there are no gravitons attached, you can simply subtract out this vacuum density of the puzzle value constant, if you wish, in the Crosby space time. No problem. And you can prove that these new addition of these bubbles decoding which is a geometric series, it adds up to a constant factor, h factor squared, and the S metric simply gets removed as a unit of the unitary density. The problem is gravity. Gravity satisfies the equivalence principle up to 1.10 to the 12 to the 10 to the 13. And once the gravitons flash onto these bubbles, you're in trouble. And indeed, for QED, along when you have put in a couple of NEV, already you have a problem with fighting for the orders of magnitude, which is serious. So already the electron has become a serious problem. And this is an infrared problem. Now consider weighing the hydrogen atom on the atomic system consisting of acceleration and loop corrections to the electrostatic energy of the nucleus, a classical gravitational field. So this graviton here is actually attached to the Earth. It's a virtual graviton. So since it's just a free graviton, it's the same as the classical theory. You all know that you can take three graph exchange, one graviton between two lumps of matter. You can do a fully transformed, you get 1/r². So here we have this system. And in there, we've got this loop. V plus U minus loop. And this loop is the same as that loop. So when you do the aluminum and the platinum here, we know the gravitational inertia mass of the same 1.10 to the 12. You work out the calculations and you find that there's a serious problem. You can actually weigh the hydrogen atom. Okay, so it turns out that if you try to suppress these bubbles here at the vertices, either with matter form factors or propagated form factors or vertices, form factors of the vertices, suppressing the coupling. Doesn't work because you run into trouble with this. You can't, this thing doesn't know the difference between the vertices in there and the ones there. And I played around with this for a year to talk about solving the problem as you put it from. Then I talked to Puchinsky, this is about 5 years ago. And I said, no, Joe, it's not correct. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Anyway, it turns out he was right. Trying to suppress bubbles, the zero-point vacuum energy, when coupled to gravitons, such that you can get down to a raw vacuum of order 2 × 10⁴. -3 eV from power, which agrees with the cosmology, the line to CM model, because you violate the equivalence principle, seriously. So all these adjustments, and you have to have people who degravitate the vacuum density of adjustments, they claim run into this trouble. Okay, now we get to spontaneous integrating or using vacuum densities. So I take an envelope, and inside 4 lines, I can divide this awful result.
So yes. The conclusion is that the true theory of nature is non-local, is that?
Ah, I did say non-local, thank you very much.
You had local.
I had local, this is important. Because if you make the theory non-local, then it starts to know all about what happened in the past. And then you can sort of maybe get your way around this. Maybe. But with a local quantum field theory, still nothing. Okay, so
take the paper and then you wrote 4 or 5 lines, I can do it. And I arrive at this supersymmetry breaking result. It's just a straightforward calculation. And I find that I get a result which is 10 to the power of 56 times the supposed observed value of the vacuum density for this model. Terrible. Also, it has the wrong sign. But I haven't done very much. It's just classical. This is all classical physics. This is a single. There's no quantum physics in there. So this tells you there's something badly wrong. All right. Now down here we find the following. The contribution to the vacuum energy is vacuum 0.8 energy plus the Higgs potential plus QCT2 and the quark condensation. So wherever you can produce a spontaneous symmetry breaking associated with a classical potential, you've got a serious problem. And you have to worry about it. Not just say, well, we'll think about it next week. Don't wait till next week. Think about it now. Okay. In 1975, Ellen and Triberry first of all published papers in physical letters discussing this, and Milton more or less said that the Higgs particle doesn't exist. There's something bad and wrong. I totally agree with him. So, more than 40 years later, we still haven't seen the Higgs particle. And life is not made easy for us, because the bottle fits all the electrical data. Puts the best fit, Higgs mass is not known, what's the best fit for the Higgs mass of 80 plus 36 minus 36 GeV, which is excluded by left 2. So you have to go up your signals to get to above 150 GeV. And the best place to look for the Higgs, that Higgs particle is between 150 and 135 GeV. That's what you see out there now. And this is not a great place to look for it. Tevatron is looking for it. They hope to get up to analyze data at 10 inverse winter times for the luminosity, in which case you begin to be able to see something. And the LHC was not built to look at things between 150 and 135 GeV. Just a lot of noise. It's difficult to do experiments. Anyway, the best way to get rid of the problem is simply not to have a Higgs particle. No Higgs particle, there's no state of field, there's no state of potential, and some other way of doing it is supposed to work. So I put out only 1991, but I've done a lot more work with it recently. And this is a Higgs particle, so I had to redesign quantum field theory rather seriously. Whenever you try to solve this problem, it's not going to be a trivial solution. You have to start redoing physics. And this is not for the faint of heart. So I don't have to worry about getting 10-year-old promotions. So I can work on these things. And make all sorts of foolish statements on the way through. So this is I don't have time to go into this. It's on the archives. I gave a talk about it at the Institute some months ago. You can pick up that talk in the audio system, in the video system. In the Higgs model, Higgs model, there is no Higgs part of mass, and there's no hierarchy problem for obvious reasons, and there's no cosmological constant problem generated by instantaneous energy breaking. I do produce the model does not violate the entirety of the TUV. I proved this. It also produces cross sections, the WW and WW, the E plus E minus W Hallett, which are different from the standard Higgs model, and which can be checked via the C. It all gets down to experimental physics. If they see the Higgs particle, forget this.
get back into the cosmological constant problem and the hierarchical problem. You don't see the Higgs particle, then you better start rethinking the whole physics. Okay, so now let me turn my attention to another attempt at solving this extremely nasty problem. And I apologize for speculations, but you to solve this problem there is a speculation. But at least it can be checked. I do believe it can be checked experimentally. So how do we cancel, if we can find a way to cancel these classical phase shift transition potentials, then we've got rid of that problem. However, we're still faced with the problem of the zero-point vacuum energy. So does there exist a symmetry that cancels the quantum zero-point vacuum energy density? That's the question. We know that so the symmetry doesn't work, because the problem you already faced with 40 decimal place fine-tuning for the electron mass, atomic physics, and there is now no supersymmetry part of half a million years, not that I know of anyway. So what I turn to is what's called the quantum negative energy symmetry, and this can cancel the quantum zero point vacuum energy. Something along these lines was suggested by Lind in 1988. Captain Sullivan in 2005, and myself in 2005, and more recently 2006. However, it was discovered by Pauli. Because in Pauli's review article about Dirac's article in 1942, is a review article published in 1943, Dirac was interviewing negative energy states and negative energy part using what's called an indefinite opposite metric. And Pauli was an Institute of Life Studies in Princeton, and he went around saying to his colleagues there, well, I've written this paper to explain to people what Paul was trying to say. It's a typical Pauli. And actually he did a very good job. It's a beautiful paper. So the idea is that we formulate quantum field theory based on indefinite metric and filter space. We generalize what we mean by Hermitian Hamiltonian to what's called an adjoint operator. Beta is the filter space indefinite metric. And we find that if you quantize the fields in the presence of gravity with positive and negative energy particle interpretation, this leads to the cancellation of the zero point vacuum energy into positive energy. So you get this result. And this is what Pauli's result derived from his paper. But he never said a word about it. He said, this is what you get, instead of saying, my goodness, I've just cancelled the zero point vacuum energy. This is very exciting. Anyway, when I read the paper, I got excited about it. So in those days, people weren't so concerned about gravity or cosmology or the issue of the cosmological constant. So I take an action of this form. This is the original essence of the bear action. If I like a bear cosmological constant, and I have two copies of the standard model. A positive energy copy and a negative energy copy. Then I quantize, following Pauli, I quantize these fields of the gravitational field using discrete quantization rules of the positive and negative energy particles. Okay, so we do expand around because of subspace, and start with this standard action. We find, of course, as usual, that the Klein-Gordon equation and the Dirac equation can put positive and negative energy solutions. Now, in 1928, when Dirac published this subspace equation, Niels Bohr wrote and said, dear Paul, you cannot, this is nonsense, you cannot have this equation because it has negative energy solutions. So Dirac, being what he is, said nothing. I don't think he responded to Bohr. And he proceeded to produce the whole theory. And this was for the proton electron, you all knew about the positive positron. And papers came out saying this is nonsense because when you calculate scattering amplitudes, and you find that because of the mass of the proton, you get nonsense. Dirac ignored all that. But you're right. Then the positron was discovered 4 years later by Anderson. But the rest is history. Anyway, in that case, of course, what you say is that the negative energy electron is actually a positron moving forward. Negative energy of electron moving backwards, positive energy positron moving forward. This is second quantization standard quantum. However, for me, I take seriously these negative energy solutions, negative energy particles, and I construct the field theory for it, and I get these commutation races for the positive energy and negative energy operators. This is what I get. This is what Pauli got. You find the half cancel, so you find that the energy cancel. So you may end up with this result. And you can show, you can extend this to any particles and fields. So,
do gravitons have a similar symmetry? That they have negative
yes.
energy gravitons?
Yes, quantize the gravitons. Use one graviton field, and you quantize, you have two contributions, positive and negative energy. Work it all out, the same thing happens.
Do your fields still commute in space like separation?
Hmm?
The fields, I mean, normally the relative phase of the positive and negative frequency part in the field is fixed by the requirement that the field commute with itself at space like separation, so that there's not a. So you don't you have microcausality.
Yeah.
Does this part?
This is microcausality.
But if you quantize one part of the field oppositely, why doesn't that ruin that cancellation?
You don't run into problems with microcausality. This is you can read my papers. It's pretty straightforward. I don't think there's a problem. Anyway, there is a problem with. Probabilities, because if you have a negative node, the Hilbert space is an indefinite metric, make you right on the edit. So you have positive norm and negative norm, and then the negative norm is negative probabilities. You've got it. However, due to the work of Bende et al., there's been a large number of papers published in this recently, you can construct a quantum field theory. Such that you introduce a new inner product. And if the Hamiltonian you have is PT symmetric, then you can show that you can get real eigenvalues, make energy eigenvalues, and you do get positive probability. It's a very interesting system. So it becomes feasible to make this work.
In that inner product is your energy bounded from below?
You have to construct a new inner product within the Hilbert space.
But normally there's a trade-off between having negative norm states or having energy bounded from below. And so if you're choosing to make your inner product positive, are you paying the price of having energy be unbounded from below?
They actually worked out GED and other quantum field theory. Calculations of quantum mechanics. There's a lot of papers.
You have to redefine your norm of state. Once you redefine it properly, then the theory is unitary, and energy spectrum is bound from below.
It's just normally conservation.
Even though Hamiltonian is not Hermitian, but
normally though you're punished. For the, I guess if I were to ask the question, how do you, under what circumstances can that be done? Is that something that you're thinking of in general?
Anyway, it's a very long story, but usual quantum mechanics, you say hermeticity guarantees unitarity,
right.
But nobody say hermeticity is necessary for unitarity. And here you find cases where hermeticity is not necessary for unitarity.
But he's fixing the problem by having a kind of an infinite positive energy part of the tower and infinite negative energy tower that cancels in this vacuum energy.
No.
It doesn't work like that. There are no infinities involved.
Yeah, take a potential minus x to the fourth.
Yes.
Or I x cubed. That's perfectly fine.
Okay,
unitary theory.
The Lehmann.
Now you can so minus x to the fourth means that you can define boundary conditions to make a unitary.
You can define your norm such that the theory is unitary and sensible, and bounded from below.
And stable.
And stable. Well, stable is once you have complete spectrum.
Thank you.
Energy is below. You expect to be stable.
But it's not in this case. Minus x.
But minus x to the fourth is not.
But he's saying that you can make it. You can make it anyway.
You can make it. Anyway, it's a very long story.
But in that particular example, I think I know what you're doing is you're basically imposing boundary conditions of infinity to get rid of the instability. You're excluding it by hand.
You can do that. Yep. By boundary condition, if you want.
So does that satisfy cluster decomposition and all things that you'd like to satisfy?
Sure. Yeah.
So you're saying the energy is bounded.
I'm not sure about the cluster decomposition.
No. You can do. Anyway. It's not just minus x to the fourth. Take ix to the power n minus bracket ix to the power n. That's all good. N equals 2 is just simple harmonic, but any other power is fine for n larger than 1, for example.
What happens is that in the Hilbert space, it is non-Hermitian Hamiltonian. This is pseudo Hermitian. And you can do a similar anti-transformation such as you gave back. So the Hilbert space of the Hermitian Hamiltonian. Once you prove the existence of the similarity transformation, the whole, this is what Einstein.
Yeah. You generalize the field theory or supersymmetric field theory, all been done.
Yes, there's a large number of papers. Okay, so where was I? Yeah, so the I've also done it for fermions and it works. Mm-hmm. Okay,
just because I have a hard time swallowing this. So in the case of minus x to the fourth,
I have to have extra time.
If I chose to focus on the classical limit,
we could discuss maybe after this talk.
But just to make a point, so we can do fancy things with states, but in the classical limit, if I'm near the top of minus x to the fourth, then everybody classically would expect to see an instability there, right?
That's right.
And so probably we're going to be close to classical gravity in this case. And so the classical limit has to also be understood, right?
Well, it's a fully quantized theory, so.
Yeah, but it's very classical in the gravitational case that we're trying to study. And
well, gravity, of course, that's a host of paper, but you know, things are a little bit more complicated.
Things are always more complicated than gravity. Anyway, we can avoid, so the issue is, so in order to make this work, I have to make a postulate that the positive energy copy of standard model and the negative energy copy of standard model only interact gravitationally. This is a assumption that has to be made. I don't particularly like this, but if I have to show this is what we get. I'm beginning to veer into dark matter and stuff, which I, as you know, personally, I'm not happy about. But anyway, if you're going to solve the cosmological constant problem, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's not going to be done in a trivial way. Physics has to be changed, I'm convinced of that. Without getting into multiverses. Okay, so. The only couple we can do that. Now, obviously, the issue is the vacuum stable? Is the universe stable with negative energy particles? And these are sometimes called ghosts. We all hate ghosts, okay? And we always try to avoid them, try putting them in to solve the problem. So we look at this and we find that if you have a collision of the negative and positive energy particles, this can result in an increase in magnitude in the energy. So if you look at the final state, you get the initial state times this, this is getting here, and then is the mass of the particle. And it turns out it can be bigger than the initial state, initial energy. So this is bad news. In contrast, in fact, you can show that the scattering theory makes energies E such that the fire energy is negative and divergent. So we must allow the negative energy part to interact with gravitational, since it is their gravitational interaction which I need for them to pass to do cosmology or have any physical consequences. So we postulate that the shadow of negative energy matter as a standard antimatter does not exist in a stable form in nature, as the cosmological scenario of the positive energy will be preserved except possible in the very early universe.
Just so I understand, the issue you're saying now is that the answer to the previous question was there really the energy is not below. Are you saying
I'm going to solve this problem now.
But first we're recognizing there is a problem potentially to be solved.
First you have to recognize that there's a definite problem.
Okay.
So antimatter does not exist in a natural state. It's a stable state in nature. Fortunately, otherwise I wouldn't be standing here. I would be annihilated, okay? By a negative, an antimatter John Moffat becoming So similarly I partially the negative energy matter does not exist in a natural state. So we don't have negative energy galaxies and adding in the positive energy galaxies, classically. Can I tell you why this is so? No. Has anyone explained why there's a huge excess of matter versus antimatter? It's called the baryogenesis problem. Has anyone really explained that yet? No. So do I feel I'm worse off than the other one? No. We proceed.
Well, let me object. So I would say that the stability issue doesn't rely on those states being occupied, in the sense that if I have a scattering process that I thought was forbidden by energy conservation, I can now have it happen by occupying the previously unoccupied state that was a very large negative energy. And so why isn't that a stability problem?
I've learned it.
Oh, okay.
Negative matter repels positive matter. Remember that to get attracted gravity, both pieces of matter have to be positive energy. So you get repulsion with negative matter versus matter. So I've been speculating upon this. I wake up at 3 in the morning and think, oh, what a great idea. Because the negative matter, it repels the positive matter. So actually, you can never get annihilation classically. But that's something I pursue at the moment.
Oh, wait a minute. Now I'll object, because that's actually the source of another instability, or maybe it's the same one in disguise.
You don't
the positive matter attracts the negative matter, the negative matter repels the positive matter, so they just run off.
Well, you can't get
But that's an instability. Right?
Yeah, but you want that, because otherwise I would be again.
No, but I mean, they
would be annihilated.
No, I'm saying they don't stay still. Like the kinetic energy goes to infinity. If you take an equal mass positive and equal magnitude positive and negative mass. If this were to happen in terms of fluctuations in virtual particles or something, you'd have the same instability. I think it is that same instability.
Okay, so as
Cliff Burgess
argues, asked, the issue. We must consider that what happens to the vacuum? So you have to worry about nothing going into two positive particles, negative energy particles, two negative energy particles. And this is the graph here, G is the graviton. So these are two positive energy photons, and two negative energy particles. So there was a nice paper by Jim Klein and Al McGill, 2004, and they worked out the state. Heavily criticized an earlier paper by Sean Carroll, if the claim was wrong, so I have a reference to this paper here. And it was also worked out by Captain Sullivan in 2005. So when you work out a probability from this process, you find that you get the size. So if you put in a cutoff, where's G? The off-shell parameters, which is Lorentz violating, The energy spectrum of photons is constrained by equal observations to carry rate. This is why it's not less invariant to cut off. This limits light is achieved to less than 3 MeV, of which the rate of decay of the vacuum is 4 compared to the conservation. I mean, the decay is the time it takes to decay is anything is way beyond the age of the universe, beyond the Hubble scale. So, this is the answer. If the quantum negative energy sector is only coupled gravitationally, then if you put in this cutoff, MeV, 3 MeV, then everything is fine. A cutoff of 3 MeV and the graviton offshell graviton momentum corresponds to a very small width, so we're not in trouble with the equipment system. Okay, we can't use a Lorentz invariant cutoff, as explained by Feynman now, because it gets into trouble with the measured photon density in the universe. And we can also graviton measurements by Heidelberg et al. Of around 0.2 millimeters. So this is something I don't like. I was one of the first to suggest spontaneous violation of Lorentz invariants 18 years ago, published. But when I did that, everybody hated me and said, you can't violate Lorentz invariants. Now everybody's doing it. Arava has his model, and this has become an industry, you know, like Ford assembling Ford motor cars. Boy, I think, what's going on here? You know? Why didn't someone take orders in my pit? Anyway, so I'm not happy about this. However, I think this will go away when we look at the more fundamental issue of how quantum field theory is done with this connection with the stability of the vacuum. I think this will go away. I hope it does. Anyway, in any case, the postulate of the positive negative energy coupled from gravity can allow for sufficient stable vacuum and positive resolution to the cosmological problem. So now I briefly get to the cosmology problem. I'm almost done. Well, the whole situation is awful. The new models come out every day, modified gravity. I published my first modified gravity theory when I was at Cambridge, an embarrassingly long time ago. My supervisor, Fred Hoyle, was not happy about it, but he was happy I published the papers. This is true. And, Roy Kerr's first paper, he published, the Kerr. It's called Static Spherical Symmetric Solution in Moffat's Modified Gravity. Anyway, getting up to the present. In 79, I published more modified gravity theory. People were not happy. We don't need this. We don't want modified gravity. Einstein's gravity is beautiful. Why are you doing this? Now I go to conferences, and a younger physicist comes to me and says, have you seen my modified gravity theory? Oh. Okay, so it's possible to. I have a new modified gravity theory, which I call MOM. Which stands for modified gravity. And it fits, it's always published in MNRES, it has to fit in general, and that's important gravity, and you can read the literature. And it fits remarkably well a galaxy data, value map data, supernova data, without dark matter, and without the cosmological constant. So you may notice that I tend to try to be on the other side of the fence. Now, this is certainly the case here. Again, observation with the citation. If we observe dark matter, then forget about this modified, if it works. If we don't, well, you have to seriously worry about modifying Einstein gravity. You cannot fit all the data available, extensive data, without either dark matter. And if not, then modifying Einstein gravity. I'm convinced this is a definite statement. So there are many alternative models explain the accelerating expansion of the universe, many of these models suffer from serious instability problems from uses for modified gravity. Nature is very stringent about what it allows. You can't just go around modifying gravity. It just says, no, you can't do that. It turns out the sun only shines for 2 weeks. As a theory by Bekenstein, the stability of that theory has been checked out. The sun only shines for 2 weeks. It's not enough time for you to have a Caribbean holiday. So this is a serious. Anyway, my model is stated for check. Now, there are other models of cosmology that make total body solutions of GR and voids in the energy rays of matter, and these can fit, possibly fit the supernova data about that energy and cosmological constant. I'm involved in this specification. These are other people who contributed to the and which one. So the issue is very murky, very dark. Dark energy is a dark business. We don't understand it. But we can do without the cosmological constant. So therefore, if I can solve the cosmological constant the way I suggested, I don't need it. Conclusions. So I have three significant points that can lead to solution to the CCP problem. The basic action contains distinct positive and negative in matter terms, which only direct the terms. You can solve the cancellation zero point energy through this work showing that non-emission gravity, non-emission quantum mechanics can actually give you a sensible physical result. And three, you have to cut off the off-shell graviton momentum at some 1 MeV or 3 MeV in order to keep the vacuum stable. Now, do I believe this? Well, it's not more speculative than the tropic principle. Extra dimensions, I mean, this is not a personal and the final word is that to solve this problem, which is a serious crisis, you have to change physics. And substantially. And so I think that for the Higgs particle, if they don't detect it, I have $100 bet that with the higher Rothstein, they won't detect the Higgs particle. The closure is 4 years. I think I'll pick up my $100. but then it's experimental physics. We have to have experiments sooner than the LHC. The fact that physics, again, fundamental physics, will be able to eliminate a lot of speculation. Thank you very much.
So maybe we can go with a coffee break, and then you want to rush to the
class. So maybe we want to...
Shall we come back at the class?
What?
At the
soon.
I'm going to get right.